Dan Celia.
I want to be a nation that is on the biblical principles and the values and the ethics that are found in Scripture.
Your personal economy.
Financial issues that you need to know.
Aligning reality with truth.
But I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
Now, here's your host, Dan Celia.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. It's great to be here. 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do it. We do have our ag report coming up, our ag report a little bit more important as we think about getting a little bit closer to a deal with China, and it does look like that is going to be happening. I think it's probably, I know everybody's focused on earnings this week, which makes sense, should be. I get that. There's a lot of optimism in Asia as the markets there are already closed in positive territory, but there's a lot of optimism there because of China and U.S. trade talk. So what's happened is Steve Mnuchin came out indicating that one of the stumbling blocks that I've talked about, a number of these stumbling blocks, one of them was this notion that China has to curb its industrial subsidies. So they give subsidies to industrial companies. And that's what creates dumping, a practice that's called dumping. And what dumping means is you go to the shores of America or wherever, whatever country, and you just dump steel, meaning you sell it to anybody that will buy it for any price. And you try to grab market share, and you sell it below what it costs to actually make the steel. That's how cheap you're selling it. And then the government subsidizes that company by giving them money that they would have made or to bring them back to even again. And remember, these are companies that are owned by the communist regime. They can do whatever they want. And they've done that for years. 3 years ago, three years ago, the number one export, and this, you might remember this because I was a lunatic over this, because it's something that I predicted was going to happen, and I was just crazy when it did happen. And that was one of the things they dumped was gasoline. And they were selling refined gasoline. It was their number one export last year as well. It's been their number one export, gasoline. They don't have any oil. They don't have any oil. They're dumping gasoline, and they don't have oil. So they've got to import their oil, refine the gasoline. They have refineries. They refine it, and then they sell the gasoline. Now, you'll remember, if you follow me for any length of time, that was my number. I was on that like a madman about the fact that we ought to be selling distilled products. We are now, but we should have been doing it 4 or 5 years ago when we could have gained market share, and we weren't doing it because the oil companies were pushing to get Congress to allow them to export crude oil, which they finally did under the Obama administration, and they got to exporting. My position was, and I was a lone wolf on this, my position was, this is lunacy. If you sell crude oil, you're selling jobs. You're giving jobs away. If we sell the refined product, we get to build jobs and keep jobs here in America, hundreds of thousands of jobs, and we get to export crude oil and gain market share when nobody else can gain that market share because they don't have the oil. We didn't do it. Now, a country like China, who has no oil, has got market share on gasoline. Go figure. So but this is all because of that practice of dumping. And the most interesting part of all of this, another thing, I hate to keep bringing these things up. It's one of those days I don't mean to. It just is what it is about something I said. I don't normally like to do that. But look, it is a fact. So I wrote about and talked about when President Obama on a Tuesday signed the Paris energy, green, I don't know, global warming accord on a Tuesday, and then Thursday signed into to law was okay for oil companies to export crude oil. And I said, that's the most ironic thing that I've ever seen. And nobody talked about it. Not one person. Not one person. I was it. Nobody talked about it. When I said, look, you just signed to reduce carbon emissions, yet you're going to send crude oil to India and China and other places that are going to refine it, making a carbon footprint half the size that we would make if we refined it here. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I was the only one that was mentioning that. So President Obama signs that we're going to reduce carbon footprint, and then he allows American companies to export crude oil instead of saying, hey, how about we refine it here rather than give those countries a chance to refine it without the controls and the regulations to refine it as clean as possible. Lunacy. And then you have China turning around being the number one exporter. Their number one export commodity is gasoline. And I'm sure, oh, they're not. And all of that carbon is coming all to the intelligentsia community of Hollywood that was so against, they were so happy to get rid of the oil when President Obama signed the agreement. I mean, do you see the lunacy in all this? It drives me nuts. But this is what was going on. And so we're probably going to continue to allow this practice of industrial subsidies. That's fine. We got to do at this point what we've got to do, but we've negotiated ourselves into this corner. So now we've got to do it. That's fine. I'm all for doing it because I'm desperate to get a deal done because I do care about the broader economy here in America and in the Eurozone, and that's going to help. So we've got to do it at this point. Anyway, Craig Hauger is going to talk about commodities, obviously, and how important this is as we head into the sowing season. And I know all of you farmers are concerned about that, as you should be. We'll be right back right after Craig.
This is Craig Haugard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. The corn market was quiet Friday, trading in a very narrow range. Most contracts finished the day modestly higher. The funds have a record short position in corn now of 294,352 contracts, which could leave the market vulnerable to a short covering rally. If we can get a scare to start the funds exiting their shorts, it could lead to a good selling opportunity for new crop bushels down the road. As I record this, the spot corn futures are trading 2 cents higher. A lack of fresh news in soybeans had Friday's session unchanged to modestly lower as the market again traded in a narrow range. In the overnight trade, we're seeing a little bit of life with spot soybean futures trading up 3 cents as I record this. Friday saw Minneapolis wheat lower while Chicago and Kansas City wheat closed higher. The Minneapolis wheat fell as a lack of demand limited any rallying potential. Kansas City and Chicago saw a rise in price due to technical trading. It was disappointing to see the U.S. miss out on all of the Egyptian wheat business.
The opening statement in the Constitution of the United States says this, that we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. I don't know what part of that we don't get anymore. That was written by men who cared about this country deeply.
Financial Issues with Dan Celia.
Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533. 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call, you're welcome to do that. All the indices are negative territory right now. Not everything's down about 1/8, 1/16 of a percent, just basically hovering around the flat line. Not a lot of movement. It was in positive territory. The markets opened all positive. It didn't last long. Dropped down below the positive line and into the red a little bit. But it really hasn't been any major moves. We're going to have to wait till the end of the day to see what happens. And, of course, they're waiting to see how things shake out with some of the reporting that's coming out later today on earnings and other things. So we'll see how all that goes. Again, low volume week in all likelihood, it usually is. So we'll see how that goes. A lot of vacation. This is a big vacation week, believe it or not. Family vacation week with spring breaks and such. So, and a short week for a lot of people. 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call, you're welcome to do that. 844-707-5533. 844-707-5533. Looks like President Trump has raised $30 million in the last few weeks. And that's more than the top two Democrats have raised combined. So that's interesting. Some good news. At least he's got no problem. He's not going to have any problem raising money. And, of course, that shows as a result of his 55% popularity rate. And I would only stand to reason that that is exactly what would happen. Goldman Sachs stock dipping down right now. Started out pretty strong this morning. It's dropping down a little bit. Revenues came in a little bit short, but profitability went up. So that, you know, I would have thought maybe the profitability would have weighed a little bit more heavily on their stock price. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Linda. Linda's calling us from Mississippi. Hey, Linda.
Good morning, Dan. How are you today?
Good.
I spoke with you last week about being a POA for a person who was incarcerated.
Yes.
Okay, my question today is, how is it that I go by when a POA is not being honored because you can't provide a current ID for the person who is incarcerated? What do I need to do in order not to lose this income?
You know, you're going to have to contact the Social Security office and on his behalf or her behalf, get some identification. I don't understand how there's not any identification through the process, just alone the process of being incarcerated. There is an identification steps that have to go through. And there shouldn't be any trouble getting the identification of a particular person that is incarcerated. You should be able to get that from the county or the state or the federal, establishment that he's being incarcerated at. And that should be easily provided to you. So if that's not it, you know the person's Social Security number, maybe you can go through that route. But I would first check with the system, the prison system, and tell them what you're trying to do and say that, you know, you need identification.
Okay, but there's no signature on that ID card.
So why do they need a signature if the government, whether it be a local government or state or federal government, identifies that person as being incarcerated? I don't understand why there would have to be a signature. Who's telling you need a signature?
Right. I don't understand that either, but I was told that I need a current ID card with a signature on it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe they can provide you with the paperwork that he was or she was giving at the time of admission into the, into the system there, and maybe they can give you something like that, but that makes no sense to me. I don't really understand that. It sounds like just government bureaucracy not knowing, you know, the left hand not knowing what the right hand's doing. And you should be able to get any proper identification you need from the prison system. And I don't, and that should be fair enough. And, you know, if that doesn't do it, I don't know where you're trying to get or what you're trying to do. But if that doesn't do it, then you're going to have to file a formal complaint with the administration of wherever it is you're trying to submit that identification to.
Okay, because now on the POA letter, the person's ID number is on that POA, and you can go on the computer and just go to MDOC and pull it up and see that they're current incarcerated. but that's what I was told.
Yeah, well, I would try to file a complaint with somebody or see if you can, you know, the other step would be to get an attorney that can step in there and get that done for you. Maybe somebody that your local municipality where you live can maybe supply you with the free legal service to get to the bottom of that for it, and you can go that route as well.
Okay, I appreciate your service, and I listen to your station now that I've found it, and I appreciate all that you do.
Well, thank you so much, Linda. I'm glad you called, and I appreciate it. I wish you all the best. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Let me go to Steve calling us from Texas. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
A couple of questions. My 401k, I get no match. And I heard you mention for us to consider not contributing to the 401k, especially if we don't get a match. I checked with my accountant, and he agrees, so I'm going to end my 401k contribution.
Okay.
So I'm contributing the max with the 50 or 55-year-old catch-up. So I'm a recent partner and have been looking at the allocation model to invest this money in the market. But I thought that I heard you say to go ahead and hold back a little bit and maybe not invest right at this time. So should I just hold this cash on the sideline and wait for your cue to jump into the market?
Well, let me ask you a question. When you say you're fully contributing to the 401k,
yes.
Are you maxing out what you can do in the 401k?
Yes, but they provide no match at all.
Right.
So I'm doing the $24,000-ish dollars a year.
So here's the problem. You can't do $24,000 in your own IRA account. So you can only do seven. So, but I want you to continue to contribute the maximum amount you can, which means you're going to need two accounts. You're going to need an IRA account where you can contribute the maximum amount, or you're going to need an investment account that you can contribute the balance of that money that you're contributing now. Now, there is such a thing as an individual 401k, and you can open that up at a brokerage account, but oftentimes it gets a little costly because you got to file tax, a set of tax returns with that, and there's certain fees attached to it. But if you did something like that, then of course you would be able to, still contribute the max. But I would still contribute that much money, but unfortunately, you can only do 7,000 of it into a traditional IRA, and then the rest into an investment account.
Okay, well, your comments raise some other questions.
Okay.
Because I thought if you had an employer that you had a 401k that you could contribute to, that you were not eligible to contribute to an outside IRA.
No, you're eligible to contribute if you're no longer maxing out that 401k. So if you're maxing out the 401k at work, then you are not eligible to open up a traditional IRA. But if you no longer contribute to that, now you're going to be eligible to open up a traditional IRA.
Okay, the reason I'm going down this path, you've said if you have enough qualified money, you need to start getting that over into cash.
Yes, so that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, but that's the number one reason that I'm moving in this direction.
Oh, okay. Well, that's if that's the case, you're opening up an investment account and you're going to start contributing your money.
Right. And then I thought that there was a cap on income, that if you were over that cap, you could not contribute to an outside IRA. Is that true or not?
Well, you're not going to use an outside IRA. You're going to use an investment account, right?
That's correct.
So there's no max on that. You can put anything you want in there.
Right. Okay, so I'm got the money. It'll be in cash on the sideline. So when do I jump in and start building my diversified account through your retirement model?
Yeah, I would jump in now. The reason that what you heard me talk about to a couple people in all likelihood last week was in reference to the Timothy funds. And they were saying they were getting ready to jump in and start with a Timothy Mutual Fund account as opposed to that first asset allocation models. And I told them to wait until the end of the month to do that. So, but it sounds like you would be... Yeah, I was talking to Steve from Texas. Steve's making some changes in his 401k. And Steve... you're not moving the current 401k that you have. You're not rolling that over yet, though, right?
Where it is.
You're going to leave that where it is. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So you're going to open up an investment account, and you're going to make maybe direct deposits so that it just comes out of your checking account on payday every day to what you were putting in your 401k at work. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Gotcha. So you were starting to ask another question.
Yes. Because of my job, I'm in the energy industry.
Uh-huh.
And I am not allowed to invest in outside oil and gas stocks upstream or midstream.
Okay.
So in the allocation model, what would you recommend that money that you have designated for energy, what sector should that go into?
Are you involved in buying your company stock?
Yes, but that's not. I'm in the banking industry, that's not the company stock is not the issue.
Okay. Well, I thought maybe that would take your energy portion for you. But if you don't own any energy stock in that 401k, then I would probably look at the utility sector. Because there's a lot in the utility sector that you can use for that energy allocation.
Right. If I'm in a managed account, it can own energy stock. But that's the only way that I can own energy stock is through a managed account.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I would use utilities.
I'm looking at the utilities.
Yep.
Perfect.
Yep.
Well, Dan, thank you so much. Thank you for your ministry. It's a challenge to us every day.
Well, thank you. I sure appreciate it, Steve. And I appreciate your call. Thank you. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Lewis. Lewis calling us from Louisiana. Hey, Lewis.
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
All right, real quick. I got a couple of quick ones. On the portfolio, how do I put cash in there as far as the different columns? And I know you've got a drop down for cash, but like cost and all of that stuff.
Yeah. So when you put cash in, you'll see the very first thing that's on my buy list, on the broad buy list, when you scroll down, the very first thing tells you how to do that. And it's a position. I think it's FDUXX. So you wouldn't have to put your money in that, but you would show in the portfolio tracker as if you were putting your cash there. So you would put that symbol in. You would put, let's say you have $5,000 in cash. You would put 5,000 shares, and you would put the share price of $1, and that'll track it for you.
Okay. All right. That sounds good, because I tried putting it in and didn't work the way I was doing it.
Yeah, that'll do it for you.
Okay. CD laddering.
Yeah.
I just came across that the other day. And does that work? I mean, that sounds okay?
Yeah, it's a great thing to do. I mean, I don't think, I would say this to you, that it's probably not as beneficial. One of the things that laddering CDs does is it helps eliminate some of the interest rate risk. And interest rate risk is that you buy a CD at a decent interest rate, say for 3 years, and in a year and a half, interest rates go up. So let's say you have a CD at 3 years at 2.5%, and now interest rates on shorter-term CDs are now 2.5% or 3%, and you take a little risk there, and the laddering eliminates some of that. And I would say that laddering is still good, and it's a good idea, but that risk of CD interest rates were, so I would say that a year and a half ago, I would have said to you, we're in a rising interest rate environment. Fed was raising interest rates all the time. Treasury, 10-year Treasury was pretty strong. And, you know, we're in this rising interest rate environment. And I wouldn't say that today, but it's a great system. It's still a good thing to do. I tell people, you know, but the difference is I would tell people now if they wanted to put money in CDs that I would go to wherever you go to get your CDs, whether it's Christian Community Credit Union or it's a bank or whatever it is, but you'll buy a 2-year CD, get an 18-month, a 2-year, and a 2.5, maybe even a 3-year CD. And then after 2 years, every 6 months, you can begin buying a CD that is a higher interest rate. So maybe every 6 months, you're buying another 3-year CD, and you're just renewing as they come due. And again, from that point on, from that 2-year point on, every 6 months, for as long as you do that, you will have a CD coming due with opportunity to take advantage of any higher interest rates.
Okay. That sounds good. It was first, I've never heard of it before. I don't know why.
Yeah, yeah.
Evidently, it's hidden.
Yeah, it's out there, I guess, but it's just not something you hear a lot about because a lot of people just aren't doing CDs, you know, like they used to years ago.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Another quick question.
Sure.
On the buy list, the yellow, I know you said that's something that you keep and hold.
Yes.
Does it matter as far as the percentage in your portfolio, though? I mean, I probably need to start buying more of those stocks.
So it would matter. It would matter if you don't want them to send you over a allocation. So let's say you're supposed to, in your asset allocation model, you're supposed to have 7% in material stocks. And one of the material stocks you own is a foundational stock. It's yellow, and it's a foundational stock. But you're already at your 7%. You don't have room. I wouldn't keep buying it. You don't want to get overweighted in any stock, even a foundational stock. So you can keep buying it, or you can buy it as long as you can stay within that percentage that you're supposed to have in that sector.
That sounds good. Well, I'm in the 55 to 65.
Okay.
And I don't have any financial stuff and all, 'cause I'm not close to retiring 4 or 5 more years, and I got plenty of time for all this. So I'm kind of staying a little ahead of that.
Yes.
But I need to try to taper myself. And then even as far as cash, we're doing, you know, very good on cash.
Good.
So that, and then I opened up a bunch of Timothy stuff, so I'm trying to move that over.
Sure.
And speaking of that, I've got messed up some kind of way in a Roth with my company in 401k. I actually have 2 Roths in there, and I'm going to move one of them to Timothy. But I think I'm going to wait until that to-be-announced thing you had.
Yes,
Timothy.
Yeah, right. You should.
That should be in another couple of weeks, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Okay. I'll wait to move that over. I mean, it's just sitting there. It's not doing anything, but.
Yeah.
All right.
Good.
I appreciate it, Dan.
Lewis, thank you, man. I appreciate your partnership.
All right. God bless you.
All right. God bless you. Thank you. Let me go to Dolman. Dolman's calling us from North Carolina. Hey, Dolman.
Good morning, Dan. How you doing?
Good.
I'm glad. Listen, I got a quick question, Dan. I already retired at 62 because of physical problems. But my money that's at the 401k from the company, it was Wells Fargo.
Okay.
Obviously, I'm turning 65 in September, so I guess I have to move it over. When do you recommend me to move it over to?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would move it over to, are you going to be using some of this money for income, Dolman?
Right now, not really, but this is my idea. My plan was I have $133,000 in there.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to invest, move it over, obviously, to an IRA or whatever, the $100,000, and the rest of the taxes to be sent to me. But I want to open a Roth IRA account with $2,000, and like maybe every year move some of that into the Roth account or whatever you recommend. So it would be like, instead of about this, you know, in other words, it would be after taxes later on. I won't have to pay taxes, obviously. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to pay taxes when I move it over. You know, but would that be a good idea, or just leave it in IRA? Or,
yeah.
Or do you think, it would be a good idea?
So if you don't, do you have earned income? Are you not working any longer?
No. I got my Social Security and I'm retired from the service.
So you can't open a Roth at this point, because you have to have an earned income to open.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Welcome back, Financial Issues, 844-707-5533. Let's go back to phones. We've got lines open, folks. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Patricia calling us from Indiana. Hi, Patricia. Patricia? All right, we don't have Patricia. She fell asleep. Bonus. I don't know. That doesn't say much for the show. Anyway, let me go to Brian. Brian calling us from Mississippi. Hey, Brian.
Hey there, Dan. How you doing today,
good.
Sir?
Good.
Hey, I heard you were here in South Haven, Mississippi probably a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And my wife went to your thing and she told us some stuff about the American funds. And so we got those. I talked to my financial guy, and we moved it out of that stuff, and put it into something a little bit better.
Okay.
And the other question I had for you is, you talked about also with that thing about, or better yet, I heard you say on the radio, you know, getting out of, because Vanguard manages all our company stuff.
Uh huh.
And so how do I ask the company, or how do I ask Vanguard to maybe move it to someplace else? Because they only give me a limited amount of funds to invest in, or am I just kind of stuck with what I got?
Yeah, you're kind of stuck with what you have, Brian. They're not. So the only way you have some options is if the company's plan, which it doesn't sound like yours is, has a what they call a self-directed option, a brokerage option that gives you a brokerage link that allows you to go ahead and do individual stocks and things like that. And more companies are going that way, but there's still a lot that don't do that. So you're probably stuck with the menu of funds that they give you. So they give you a menu of funds, maybe it's 15 funds, 20 funds, and you're probably stuck with those. And it's going to be difficult to become biblically responsible with the exception of the bond funds, the government bond funds. How old are you, Brian?
I'll be 50 in July, and I've been maxing out my 401k for the last 3 years. So I know I get to start the catch-up contributions this year, which I'll be doing.
So The big thing is that, you know, you still have, I'm just going to say, I don't know, but you would probably still have 12, 15 years of working there before you retire. And I would like you to be, you know, a little bit more aggressive. I don't know that you can take, it's not necessarily prudent or wise to be taking all of that and parking it into a, you know, into a bond fund. Now, do the, does the company match?
I get a 3.5% match as long as I put in at least 6%, and I've put in, you know, way more than that. So,
so I mean, your other option would be to put 6% in of your pay, put that 6%, because you're already made, as soon as you put that 6% in, you just made 50% on your money, and that's a good deal. So, and put that into maybe an inflation-protected bond fund, a couple other government bond funds, and then take the other 15% or 12%, whatever's left of that, and put that into either a traditional IRA, which probably wouldn't work for you, or put it into an investment account. Now, here's the thing that I want to emphasize to you as something as food for thought, that you are getting an immediate tax benefit by what you're doing. You're not necessarily, I don't think you're helping your tax situation for when you retire, because someday you're going to take that money out and you got to pay tax on all of it as income. So it's just being deferred. But there's this immediate tax benefit of that money, which is a fair amount of money, is coming right off the top of your gross pay. So it's not subject to any kind of payroll tax. So let's say you're putting, you know, you're putting 100 hours a month in, obviously a lot more than that, but you're putting 100 hours a month in, and it may only feel like $98 coming out of your pocket because it's being taxed prior to payroll tax hitting. And that's a huge advantage. And you'd have to give some of that up if you went with an investment account. But the advantage to an investment account is, I'm suspecting, I don't know, but if you've been contributing for 20 years into that 401k or a 401k, a work-related 401k, you probably have a pretty fair, a pretty good amount in that account, you know, a fair amount. And
yeah, there's over three in there now.
Yeah, yeah. So to me, and if I were you, I would rather start focusing, you know, do your 6%, but I'd rather focus on anything else being in an investment account so you don't have all of your wealth someday tied up in qualified money, money that is going to be regulated by the government, that you know how the government is. They think if they regulate it, they own it. There's going to be changes. It could be under threat of a number of different things. I don't want to get into conspiracy theory things. I'm not that kind of person. But at the same time, I'm just a realist, and I don't know that I would want all my wealth tied up in something that the government has some level of control on. And since you've got enough of that, and probably in the next 12 years, that 300 is going to be, you know, a heck of a lot more, even at putting the 6% in. And I would rather see you begin to build an account that you have total control over, that you can do whatever you want with, put it wherever you want. You can, you know, allow it to grow, and you can keep that as money that is growing well into your retirement. You don't have to take any money out. And in fact, you shouldn't. Any money that you need after retirement, you should take out of your qualified money so that that money that's in your investment account is growing and building, and that can be money for your heirs or whatever. But I'd rather see you take a little bit of a change in your overall strategy and mindset about that anyway. And the way you would do it and still get biblically responsible is put your 6% in. That 6% that's going in to your 401k, that's your conservative position. So you look at our asset allocation money and say, well, I'm supposed to have X amount percentage in cash or be fairly conservative. That's going to be it. So in your investment account, because I treat everything as one pot of money, in your investment account that you're contributing to every pay, that can be left to be your aggressive side of your portfolio. your individual stock positions that have great growth potential that are going to be a little bit more volatile, yes, but are probably going to do very, very well over the next 10 or 12 years. And that would leave that pot of money for your aggressive positions, and then all of that can be biblically responsible.
Okay, because I'm just was trying to figure out what to do or how to ask, and but it sounds like it's
yeah,
there's not really an issue here, but
no.
Yep. Okay, well then I'll see what I can. So do I do that through your thing, or do I do it through
I don't have a way to do that here. We don't do that. I would probably go to Vanguard and go to their brokerage side. Vanguard has brokerage accounts, and just because it's easy and it kind of, you know, you already know that, chances are when you leave that company someday, you're going to roll that 401k into your brokerage account, another brokerage account that's an IRA account, so you can control it there. But I'd probably stick with Vanguard Brokerage. And they're going to allow you to do everything Fidelity or anybody else is going to allow you to do. And that way it kind of keeps things under one roof.
That's fine. I just didn't know how to. And I imagine they would have plans for.
Well, they're not going to have too many plans for that. That's going to be biblically responsible. They're not going to have any. But I would want you at that point. I was assuming maybe that you were already a partner, but I hate to ask you to be a partner. I'm not doing it for that reason. But if you wanted to follow that biblically responsible model, then you would look at our asset allocation models on our partner side. There's one that is 45 to 55 age, and that's the one I'd want you to stick with. And in that, you can buy individual stocks, maybe a couple mutual funds, but they're all biblically responsible. And you begin to build that well-diversified portfolio in every sector through that, and you just do it gradually. So each month you're going from sector to sector and you keep rotating through, and you're build a really nice diversified portfolio.
Okay, well, I'll have a discussion with my wife and see what we can come up with.
Okay, that sounds great. The opinion.